All right, we welcome Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. And Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Marty. What's going on?
Well, we're ready for baseball again today. The Giants try not to get swept by the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're 14-4 against the Giants. And Bruce, this game last night was a tough one for the Giants. And, you know, I talked about, I said, you know, Brebby is going to open terrific. But the guy I want to see is Sean Jelly. And I think the Dodgers wanted to see him as well, as they just whacked him around pretty good.
Yeah, I did see some highlights, and I've seen him before. You know, he's a big guy. He's intriguing. You know, he's got pretty good stuff. But I don't know. He strikes me as kind of a comfortable at bat for all of his physical imposition. He's a bit of a slinger, and I don't know. He just doesn't look as overpowering as you might think he would be, especially in a big league setting. Now, you know, going in there against the Dodgers, that's going straight into the fire. But I was hoping they would just start him, as we agreed yesterday. You know, let him face Betts and Turner and Freeman, for heaven's sake. But you know, the Dodgers are that lineup is never really lets up on you. So, you know, it was a good learning experience for him. They certainly aren't going to give up on him or anything, but I don't think he's a rotation candidate for next year anytime soon.
No, and that's part of September, is to evaluate players. And, you know, look, he had the great game against Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is a little bit challenged as a hitting team, but still, you're in the major leagues to go five innings of three-hit ball. And, Bruce, last night, for me, it was just 93 right down the middle.
Exactly.
And it just was putting it on a tee, and they got five hits in a row off him. And that was, he just couldn't shut it down. And I felt we want to see him another time or two. I wouldn't bring him in relief. I'd let him start where he feels comfortable. But you got to see him another couple of times to really figure out what you got for next year.
Oh, no question. Yeah, you don't, that's not the only sample you're going to get. And, they see him as a starter. He should be starting. You know, if you start, you just can't baby him like that. You can't say, well, we don't want you in the first inning. If they were one game out and they had this was a game they needed, and maybe you do something crazy like that. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But I agree with you. Too many pitches come right down the middle. Even if they're 98, you know, or 99, if they come into your wheelhouse enough, the big league hitters are going to crush it. So we'll see if you can find a little bit of command.
Well, the other interesting part of last night, first of all, Flores, and we haven't talked about that, you and I, the contract extension for him, and what does that really mean? What do the Giants really want to do with him next year? As he gets almost a three-year deal, two guaranteed and an option year for the third. But he hit a home run last night. He's now 5 for 55 in his last 55 at-bats. But he did get the extension, and he did hit a home run last night, his career high 19. So what are your thoughts about extending him and what it means to the ball club?
Well, I like it because, you know, they're so short on really reliable hitters. That 5 for 55 is definitely not – that's not Flores at all. I mean, I don't recall anything like that in his time with the Giants. He's a good, very good major league hitter and a threat, and he likes big moments, and he's had a lot of them. I just think that you don't know where you're going to play him, but you still need him. You know, they're going to make some trades and free agent acquisitions, but they have so little to trade that you wonder if they're really going to get, how many really good hitters they're going to get. And so maybe he'll play third or second or first or DH, but you've got him. He's a good hitter, and you sign him up. That's kind of what it's about, and we'll see where it goes. But I think it's a very smart signing, and it's good to know that he wants to stay here.
Okay. Now, I was thinking about this today. This would be a good example. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. If you're Farhan today and you're applying for the job to be president, general manager, whatever you want to call the title, of the San Francisco Giants, and you're coming in for your interview, and you're going to try to convince the ownership that you're the right guy, and you have the team that's on that we have now, and if you're Farhan, what do you tell the ownership as to what you see the future to be and what you can do to make this right? What do you think he would say?
Well, I don't know what he would say, but I think what he should say is you've got a team that has been vastly disappointing. The fan base is gravely disappointed with what they've seen. I mean, there's a lot of extremes. You know, you got to get rid of Kapler. I don't believe that at all. I mean, not after last year. He deserves a chance. But we're going to stick with the manager. But we've got to change some things. I know Brandon Belt wants to come back, but I think his time here is done. I really do. The shortstop position, I think we have to stick with Crawford there because I don't think he's not worth much in trade. And if you bring in a Bogarts or a Correa or whoever it is, you can't really have Crawford around. That's just insulting. We'll see about that. But the main thing is I'm really tired of looking at a lot of these guys coming to the plate and not succeeding. And I know you don't want to rush the kids, but I want to see Matos. I want to see Casey Schmidt. I want to see Luciano. I want to see these guys as soon as possible. I want to see them in spring training, and let's see if maybe they're ready to play for us this year, because it's a tired look, and the fans are tired of it.
I like it. No, I think he's got to come in with that kind of plan, that you can't be sedentary. You've got to make something happen. But I think it's a good question, because it takes in the evaluation of what you've seen now, and how do you make it better. And I agree with you. Cole Waits, Bruce, I don't know if you saw him last night. Good right-hander. He's definitely got a good arm. The command isn't really there yet, but I could see him coming into this bullpen next year. And that's the kind of guy, what you're saying, that's what you want to see.
Yeah, the bullpens are so screwy. I mean, for a while this season, the Giants had one of the best. It was rated, across the board as one of the best in the bigs. And 2 months later, it's not getting the job done, at all, except for maybe Duvall and a couple of nice moments before him. So you put a guy like that in the mix, and you see where it goes. I mean, I don't think you could forecast the Giants' bullpen in any way for next year, except that you like Duvall to close. Beyond that, I think some new faces will show up. Some of the guys they still have will keep the job. Some won't. And Waits will figure. But, it's such a transitory thing. The bullpens are so you can't expect a bullpen to do the same thing for you all season. It's very rare that happens. So,
a bullpen has turned into let me see you throw 98 or 100, and we'll figure out how to use you, and that's what bullpens are. So you can find pitchers that do that. It gets back to the rookie of the year thing. Let's talk about that for a second. Whether it's Strider or Willie Harris. Michael Harris, the second, for Atlanta. Now, Strider comes in as a pitcher. He comes in and he can throw what he throws, and basically he's who he is. Michael Harris, you can hit, but they're going to figure you out in about 10 days, and you're going to have to adjust to that. So for me, you could get bullpen guys. That's my point. Hitters are tougher. And for rookie of the year, I'd go for Harris over Strider, even though Strider's been terrific.
Well, yeah, Harris has been huge. I mean, as much as they value Matt Olson, Freeman was a big loss, and they've had injuries. Acuna's been out. He's finally back and looking good. Albies is out again now. And Harris has been a real revelation in that lineup. He's just been terrific. He's very, very solid. I agree with that. I tend to go with position players over pitchers, except for obviously for the Cy Young. But I get annoyed if a pitcher wins the Cy Young, that wins the MVP. That's completely wrong, even unless you're Otani. But I think. If you talk about bullpens, I think there's always room for a guy who throws 89 and 90, and hits the corners.
Good luck.
is a complete change. Hitting is all about rhythm and timing, and if you see the same bunch of guys throwing 98, you get used to that. I think there's no harm in having a guy. Now, make no mistake, he's got to consistently hit his spots, but I think there's always room for a guy who throws strikes, gets guys to chase bad pitches, doesn't lay it down the middle, and then the next guy throws 98.
Well, we'll see. The bullpens have turned into something else. The Greg Maddoxes of the world, they still can start. You'll see them once in a while. But, boy, you think of Kyle Hendricks or Zach Davies or people like that. And, Bruce, these guys get lit up because you have to have pinpoint command. But I think the bullpens are different. And I think the Giants can get a good bullpen next year. And I think Cole Waits will be part of it at some point. Mm-hmm. I actually think that. Interesting on this the rule change thing that came up this week. And that is the infields are not uniform. And I'll talk to the professor about this, and I know we have in the past. But in Colorado, the infield is like twice the size of a regular infield. So with the shift going away next year and the giant infield in Colorado, you're actually playing almost in shift-like territory. So they're going to probably change it, I would imagine. So all the infields are uniform, I guess.
Well, that's absolutely how it should be. It's funny. I really wasn't aware of the disparity around the big leagues. But they absolutely should be the same. The infield should be the same. The dirt measurement should be exactly the same everywhere you go. That's especially now. And then that's going to happen because, you know, if the infielders have to be stationed there, it's going to be there's a lot more focus on it. So that's good.
Yeah, and I'm not freaked out by the idea of the shift going away. And I'll tell you why. For 150 years, we had people who actually could play short and play second. And whether it's Nellie Fox or Rogers Hornsby or Jeff Kent or Joe Morgan or whoever you want to put in there, Nellie Fox, they were second basemen, and they covered the territory. And we'll just go back to having people who can play second and then the great shortstops who could cover the ground at short. I kind of like that idea, and I think that's what baseball's all about, so I'm not freaked out by losing the shift.
Oh, I'm 100% behind you. Just the aesthetics of it. Just like you walk into a ballpark for the first time before the game and you see the green grass and you're just enraptured, and then the game starts and there they are. They're all where they're supposed to be. There's a shortstop. There's a second baseman. There's a center fielder. There's a beauty to the aesthetics of that. I don't care where the stats go if they limit the shift. I don't care if they go up or down. I'm tired of the look. The aesthetics are pitiful and really demoralizing, and they've taken away the left-handed dead pull slugger. That's part of the game. And, you know, you don't ask a guy like that to dribble singles to left, even if he does it. That's not what he's paid to do. That's not what people watch him for. That's not how he grew up. That's not why he helps you. You know, play it straight and let the game unfold. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I want to see regular players out there. Joe Panic, he can play now.
Exactly.
So he doesn't have to cover the outfield as well. So I'm looking forward to that part of it. We had one of those no-hitter issues that you and I love to talk about this past week with Ryan of Minnesota. He's a kid, I think, from San Anselmo or somewhere.
Yeah, Marin County, yeah.
Yeah, from Marin. And he goes 7 no-hit innings, and Rocco Baldelli pulls him out. And, of course, they lose the no-hitter in a couple of pitches after that. But I loved his comment after the game. He says, look, in college I threw 142 pitches and 156 pitches. I'm okay. You can let me go. But Baldelli wouldn't let him go. And, of course, the Twins have completely fallen apart. But I thought this is you and me talking again with Ryan.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's ever going to be another no-hitter because everybody's terrified. You know, oh, my God, he said 101. Well, geez, 102 pitches. Now he'll never pitch again. You know, it's really pathetic, you know, and they don't realize what it means to some of these guys. Now, if it's somebody like Zach Wheeler, you know, or Steven Matz or whatever, you know, guys with a big arm history, you know, of course you limit what they're going to do out there. But this kid's been on fire. He's been a good story all year for the Twins. He's young. He's like you say, he's used to throwing 150. It reminds me of what John Montefusco said. We were talking about him. He said, I came up throwing 160 pitches, and I could have gone more. Nobody said anything because I was on a roll. And he stayed on a roll for years. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. I love the kid's comment. He said, look, I've thrown 150 before. It's okay. Yeah, and Baldelli said, well, we need to save you for the stretch drive. Well, they've lost so many to Cleveland, there is no stretch drive.
That's right, they got buried by the Guardians of all things.
Yeah, no. Well, they had a play yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, a runner. You know, Gary Sanchez is the catcher, and he is limited defensively, and we'll talk about why in a second. But he's got that one-legged catcher thing that Bart's got, which is just ruining Bart, in my opinion. And there's a ball in the dirt. Sanchez can't stop it. It goes way up in the air, goes behind him, and the guy scores from second base. And the pitcher really gave him no help, and he was slow coming to the plate. But that's what we see today with that one-legged catcher thing where one leg is extended out. The catcher can't move.
I truly don't get it. And, you know, I think base stealing is going to be on the upswing a little bit with the larger base. It doesn't sound like much, but how many times do you see a guy either safe or out by, you know, 2 inches on a steal at second? And I just think the mentality towards stealing more bases will be there. And you've got to be in position to rise up and throw that guy out. I don't like the trend toward that. I know Kruko doesn't like it either. He was a catcher and knows all about the position. And there's certain fundamentals that should be applied.
Now, Rick Monday was talking about it a lot on the Dodger broadcast about Bart and what it's doing to him. And I'll tell you, the problem is, next year, if you can't throw over to first base more than twice, or if you throw over twice, you know he's going. There's going to be a lot of stolen bases. There has to be. And the catcher can't be in that one-legged thing anymore, because after two throws over, the guy is going to go, and you have to be able to throw him out. And you can't really throw him out from that position. So it's going to change. It has to change.
And it will. I know. I didn't even mention that angle of it in terms of base stealing being increased more next year. That's a huge factor. It's so radical. I've had a hard time digesting that you can only make two pickoff throws over there. You can do a third one, but you have to get him. That is really a big change. So, but I'm all for speeding up the game. I'm all for stolen bases. It's always been a big part of the game. And the analytics people tried to say that it wasn't, but it is. It always has been, and it's going to come back.
Well, we'll see. But I think, you know, after you throw over twice, goodbye. I'll see you later, as they like to say. As Ricky Henderson, you say, I'll see you at second base.
Well, you could allow 19 pickoff throws, and he'd still get you.
Right. He would say, well, I'll see you later. Ricky's leaving. So
yeah. Ricky will be down there.
Yeah, he would. He'd say that. You know, you throw over a couple of times, I'm getting tired of coming back to the bag. Ricky's leaving.
Absolutely.
And the next pitch, he would leave and steal second base. Well, you could imagine this thing. So, all right, it's going to happen. It is Sunday morning. Bruce Jacobs, of course, we love doing this together. And that is, we look at the leaders. And, you know, Freddie Freeman is leading the National League in hitting. Goldschmidt, who has a shot, Bruce, at the Triple Crown. He really does. 322. Freeman's 331. And Jeff McNeil is 317 of the Mets. So Goldschmidt is still in the race here. But Freeman, how about the big first baseman hitting 331?
No, that's great. Yeah, you know, the two of them. I mean, you like to get, you know, power on the homers and RBIs and everything from those guys. But for them to be up there in batting average is really invigorating, because they're such good hitters. I mean, especially Freeman. You know, he's one of those guys that you say, if he gets bummed out hitting a bunch of rockets to right field that are robbed by the shift, he won't just poke a single through an open space. He'll double up the alley in left center just routinely, or hit the ball out the other way, which is just – that's real genius hitting. And Goldschmidt, I love – you know, he's obviously tormented the Giants for years, but – he just seems to get better. He's not that young of a guy anymore.
No, 34 probably at least.
Yeah. But you know, he could be in the World Series, and everybody's going to find out even more about him.
Mm. All right, now the American League really is interesting, because Arraez, who we saw with Minnesota, you know, I was not impressed. He didn't have a good series against the Giants. 316. Bogarts, who will be a free agent, Giants are going to be looking at him, I'm sure. 315. But here comes Aaron Judge. Bruce at 312. He can win the batting title. He can win the Triple Crown. You know that?
Yeah. There's another guy. What I love about Judge is that, you know, he doesn't have a complicated swing like, you know, like a Cody Bellinger with all the moving parts and the hitch, and he can go into these horrible slumps. He's got a very basic swing. It's big. It's big and powerful, but it's simple. The hands are pretty quiet, and he can poke a ball to right field, it'll go out, especially at Yankee Stadium, but anywhere. And I just don't see him he's going to be a 300 hitter at the end of the season. I don't know what it'll be, but he's a guy that you really like to watch because it's so much more than the power. His complete game is just great to watch. But yeah, I'd love to see him win the Triple Crown.
Wouldn't this be something? If we had two Triple Crown winners, I'm sure that's never happened before, because you'd have to go back to 1937 for Ducky Medwick, of course, in the National League. But, you know, Goldschmidt is in the race for it, and Judge, Bruce, he's got 123 RBIs. Ramirez is 112. And Tucker, who's a nice player for Houston, 99.
Yeah.
Then in the RBIs in the National League, Alonso is 114. Goldschmidt is two behind at 112. So he's 9 percentage points behind Freeman in batting, 2 behind Alonso in RBIs, and Arenado's 98. Then how about home runs? Judge is at, that's locked up. He's got 57.
Yeah.
I don't care how many Alvarez hits this week or next week. He's not getting up. He's got 37.
Yeah.
Trout's got 36.
Crazy.
Schwarber, 39. Riley, 36. He's been stuck on that for a while. And then here comes Alfonso and Goldschmidt with 35. So isn't this amazing that both of them have a shot at the Triple Crown?
It's just absolutely great. If that happened, it'd be really wonderful. And it would just reinforce the notion of, you know, being in the launch angle era, you know, be a hitter too. You know, be a smart hitter. You're not always going for the downs. Be a situational hitter, you know, with power, and that's what we're seeing. It's funny, he's only two behind Alonso in the RBI. I'm not sure he catches Alonso. That guy's a beast. He's an RBI machine. I love watching that guy. And the Mets, it's not a Titanic order. You got your Cannas and your Vogelbachs and your Nimmos, and he's really the anchor of that thing. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, but this is going to be fun. We may be able to get rid of Ducky Medwick finally.
No, I don't think so. I'll bring him up. He and Sully Hemus are going to figure prominently
right.
Next season.
Right. We've got him and Harry Chidi. We'll put him in the mix, too. In wins, the Kyle Wright for Atlanta. Now, he pitched well against the Giants. He's got 18. Urias has 17. Can Urias win 20, be back-to-back 20-game seasons? Boy, I'm kind of rooting for that. I'd like to see that.
Oh, no question. To me, there has to be at least one 20-game winner. I know it's an old-school way of thinking, but, you know, wins, it's a pretty good number, right? It's like runs scored. That's just an infallible number, you know, even as much as it's dismissed. Runs batted in, that's a good number. You know, it's not something to be dismissed by advanced metrics. And wins are very important to pitchers. You know, there's so many times a manager will take a guy out. The guy's got 4 2/3 innings, and he's pitching pretty well. He just struck out a guy with a nasty breaking ball, but, oh, my God, we don't want him to face the order the next time or this and that. Then he's got a 2-run lead, and they take him out before he can get a win. It's just thoughtless. And that's why we don't have the – we certainly have the talent for a bunch of 20-game winners if it was, you know, conducted with a little more patience and belief in your guys. But the way the game's going now, it's just so hard to do. So I hope Urias, he is a genius little pitcher. Man, it's great.
Well, look at the wins, right? Snitker's the manager, old-school manager. Urias with Dave Roberts. Gonsolin, 16, Dave Roberts. Verlander, 17, Dusty. Famber Valdez, who's been terrific, 15 with Dusty. So those are managers who will leave you in there a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Roberts has a bit of a checkered history there. He's been known to he's done some stuff with Kershaw and Gonsolin that they didn't like. But I agree on the real side. He's more inclined to, and I think he's learned from taking guys out too early, especially in the postseason. That you got a guy who's on a roll. The worst one was Walker Buehler had an absolute gem going in the I think it was the World Series. And Sandy Koufax was standing and clapping. That's how good he was as he walked off the mound. And he took him out. It's like, you kidding? And they lost the game.
I know. Well, we're going to see a lot of middle relief this year. Believe me, that's going to be a big part of these playoffs. All right, last one for us, strikeouts. Cole, who pitches today, 228 for the Yanks. Then we've got Rodon with 220. Then Burns, Milwaukee, 219. And Dylan Cease, 214. How about that? You know, the strikeout leader's always been something special.
Well, those are damn good numbers in this era when you consider that guys aren't pitching as many innings. Mm-hmm. But there, and obviously there is a huge emphasis on the strikeout. Like you said, every relief pitcher's got to have strikeout stuff or you don't want to see him. But so for anybody to be over 200, I'd love to get to 250, which Cole might get, is a tremendous number these days. Because, you know, 300 in the past was like, you know, that was reserved for the very, very best. You know, Gibson, Koufax, Nolan Ryan, whatever. So to get anywhere in the 200s, and, you know, Rodon is he's a classic strikeout guy. He's so electric when he's on, and that's one of the great things to notice that guys, at least in strikeout rate, you know, per nine innings, that these guys are as good as pitchers have ever been.
Yeah, it's a good story. All right, we'll do more next week. I like doing this, especially as we get to the end of the year with the two Triple Crown races. That's actually amazing. Historical note today, September 18th, Mickey Mantle, the great Mickey Mantle, hits his 50th, 1956, on the way, Bruce, to a Triple Crown. How about that? Appropriate.
Yeah, you know, it's 353 he finishes with. And he 52 homers and 130 RBIs, which are really good numbers. But what made that season so amazing was some of the other numbers. He scored 132 runs. Willie Mays never did that. Ricky Henderson only did it once in the millions of years that he played. His Aaron Judge doesn't have any of the numbers that Mantle had, but the 464 on base, 705 slugging, 1.169 OPS. Judge is having a monster year. He doesn't have any of those numbers. Willie Mays and Henry Aaron never had any of those numbers at any time. Mickey Mantle in 1956, oh, my goodness, he did have a knee injury behind him, but he was still extremely fast, extremely powerful, switch hitter, hitting tape measure homers from both sides of the plate. Casey Single said something like, "This guy has more speed than any slugger I've ever seen and more slug than any speedster I've ever seen." And the kid ain't logical.
Only Casey could say that.
Only Casey. And, of course, you know, in those days, boy, they made some big money, didn't they? He's coming into 56 as a $17,000 salary. And
wow.
They radically almost doubled it to $33,000. That's what he made when he put together this amazing season.
Mm. George Weiss, boy, he was the general manager of the Yankees. Boy, great story, Bruce. This was a lot of fun today. I was going to ask you about UW. You went to the football game yesterday in Washington and Michigan State. How was that?
Yeah, I'm spending a week up here. Our daughter lives here now, but we went to the Huskies last night. This is one of the great settings in all of sports, maybe the best in college football. You're overlooking the lake and the boats and the trees and you know, the crisp autumn air. And the Washington has a good team this year, and Michigan State was coming in. It was a really good game to watch, and Washington won. But we just, you know, we were tailgating and sitting in the stands in a sea of purple.
we're
Oregon parents, but we didn't tell anybody. But you know, we just love the whole scene. This is a really great sports town.
Beautiful.
They need an NBA team, but they'll get one eventually back.
All right. Very good. Well, look, enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk next week. It's Giants and Diamondbacks next weekend, so we'll talk then. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet, Marty. Thank you.
All right. Have a good afternoon. All right. More coming up. Always a pleasure to have Bruce on. Interesting author next. It's Dan Levitt, very well known in the Sabre community and in the baseball community. His book is Intentional Balk. Where do you hear this? More coming up on the Sports Leader.